Welcome back to another episode of The Political Life. Today, we are leaving Europe and coming back to the States. Actually, I don't mean that literally. We were not in Europe, but we were interviewing people, as you know, if you're a listener, from Brussels and Great Britain. But now we are coming all the way back to the States, back to the great state of New York, and back to the issue of cannabis and legalization. And today's guest is Katie Neer. Katie is the head of industry affairs at a company called Lantern. And we're going to learn all about Lantern. Lantern, my description, and Katie can correct me when she comes on, is an on-demand cannabis home delivery platform, essentially a tech platform that connects customers with dispensaries. And we're going to hear all about it. And so, Katie, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jim. I'm glad to be here.
How was my description of Lantern? Was it close?
It was spot on. We are an e-commerce cannabis platform that facilitates home delivery.
Well, I have to confess, I stole it from your website. So it was not my description. So I would encourage people to go check out their website if they want to learn more. And so, Katie, let's just jump right in. What states are you active in right now?
So Lantern operates in Massachusetts, where we're headquartered, Michigan, and Colorado right now. But we have eyes on New York and New Jersey, and of course, I am also paying attention to Connecticut.
And are there other states that you're paying attention to, or just those right now?
Just those for right now. But I think 2022 will bring another slate of states to my radar.
Yes. And do you think that will be, just as time goes on, every state will start to take a look at it? Or do you think the new administration in Washington will encourage more states to begin to take a look at this?
I think the new administration in D.C. and the partisan makeup of Congress is important and will build momentum for the legalization movement. But I still think the battle is going to be at the state level for the next few years.
Okay. So tell us about Lantern and tell us how it works.
So Lantern has been incubated within a company called Drizzly, which I think my colleague Jackie from Drizzly was also a former guest on the podcast.
So, she has been indeed. She was a great guest. Yes.
So Lantern, we're the sister company of Drizzly. We started about a year and a quarter ago. We're the same tech, same concept as Drizzly, but as most people have heard now, Drizzly is having an exciting exit with Uber. And so when that closes and when that's finalized, Lantern will spin out. We'll remain our own new independent company and continue to try to test this in the cannabis space. So essentially, we are a direct-to-consumer website platform. We partner with dispensaries and operators in states, put their inventory on our website, create a very smooth experience for the customer to explore different product types that they may be interested in and make an order. And then our technology works with the dispensaries on the back end to help facilitate that home delivery. And so some markets, you know, it's the dispensary employee facilitating that delivery. And in some other markets, there's a third party delivery licensee that's actually facilitating that delivery. At Lantern, we don't touch the plant. We're simply the tech solution. So we're that pure third party tech, just like our sister company, Drizzly.
So essentially you bring the parties together.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Interesting. Now, is the ownership or I guess the primary ownership of Drizly and Lantern is, or was the same, or is the same?
Still is the same right now. Yep, that's correct. And when Drizly transitions into Uber, we will become our own standalone company with our own board.
Yeah. Talking about our prior guest, Jackie, exciting times for her.
Indeed. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. To be part of a startup like that, that gets acquired by Uber. Exciting time for Jackie.
Yeah. That's the dream. I mean, we think it says a lot about the prospects for Lantern and what we're building and what our vision is. And we're excited.
Well, it does say a lot, about Drizly, about the ownership, the employees, the platform. Uber has a lot of options, and I think you're right. I think it does say a lot, and I think it bodes well for Lantern's future and exciting days, hopefully for Katie. So when you say dispensaries, if you take a state like Massachusetts or New York, Massachusetts or, say Colorado, how many dispensaries approximately would there be, in a state or say in a city like Boston or Denver?
Great question. So we will probably have around 6, maybe a little bit more, dispensary partners when we launch in Boston. And we feel like that will provide very good customer options and product options and good coverage to execute deliveries that meet customer expectations. So we believe that's going to be under an hour to get that home delivery. But in order for us to be successful in that mission, we do need enough dispensary partnerships to provide that regional coverage and that customer choice from a product and brand standpoint. In Colorado, it's a little bit different of a marketplace. So while home delivery is legal at that state level, each locality has to pass a local law opting in to home delivery, and they can set up their rules. Their local law can vary. It can be a little bit different around hours of operation or different regulatory requirements for the vehicles and the drivers, and also a little bit different on who exactly can facilitate that delivery, whether it's the dispensary itself or a third-party delivery company. And so Colorado is just a slower rollout so far to date. Only Aurora has opted in to allow home delivery and gone through the rulemaking process, released license applications, and actually issued licenses. So we are operating in Aurora. Denver is next. They've passed their local law. They just need to implement the licensing. So to be determined on the sweet spot of number of dispensary partners in the Colorado market, but we're confident that in Massachusetts for a Boston launch, we're in a good position.
And when will you have the Boston launch?
It's a million-dollar question. we hope in at least, by the second half of this year. A lot of these launches, all of these launches are largely intertwined with how quickly regulators are or are not moving. So in Massachusetts right now, there's 2 different delivery licenses that exist. The courier license, which is going to be a third party entity that picks up a product that's been ordered from a dispensary and delivers that to the consumer. The second type is called a delivery operator license. That license type is going to be able to have a warehouse, essentially, of product and accept orders themselves without that connection to a storefront and deliver that product that gets ordered directly to consumers. There are a handful of companies that have that courier provisional license, but not a final license. And the second license type I just described, the application hasn't been released yet by the Cannabis Control Commission. So we're sort of in a holding pattern. We can't necessarily launch delivery in Massachusetts until at least those courier licenses are finalized.
And then you hope eventually to be operating under both the courier and what I'll call the warehouse model?
We do. We hope to have partners who have that warehouse license type as well. And we think we will bring them a lot of value and help them reach a lot of consumers.
And is there overlap with companies that have retail locations and warehouse locations, or is it two different types of companies?
Two different types of companies. What Massachusetts did, which Lantern supports from a policy perspective 100%, is they've decided to limit these delivery license types to social equity qualified businesses and individuals. So, and they've put an exclusivity on that for 3 years. So only social equity businesses can get that courier license or that operator license in the delivery space. And we think that's an excellent and creative solution to the social equity issue that, you know, we were talking about a little bit before we got started.
And walk us through, and I think you might have touched on this earlier, but if I'm in Boston and order a product from a dispensary and it's going to be delivered, how does Lantern typically get paid?
So we get paid a flat fee from our dispensary partner per order that gets placed on our platform or through our platform. And that seems to be the cleanest way to set up the arrangement. And then of course we're incentivized to drive as much volume as possible through the platform, which also is mutually beneficial to the dispensary partner in helping them reach new consumers that they otherwise wouldn't with just foot traffic.
And in Denver, how are you interacting with Denver regulators on a constant basis as they get ready to set this up?
Yes. Yeah, so the Denver Excess and Licensing Agency is one of the most refreshing regulator experiences I've had. Frankly, they're extremely thoughtful when it comes to policy making. They're very accessible. They've put a lot of thought and work into their local ordinance that they passed earlier this month. And they've been a pleasure to work with.
That's great. And so, and then once a city is set up and it's working, do you think your interaction in your role with that state and municipality will pretty much cease?
I plan on maintaining those relationships and staying in touch. Even though Lantern doesn't get licensed ourselves, we do have strong public policy opinions when it comes to delivery in the cannabis space and when it comes to social equity in the cannabis space. And part of what we do, part of our mission is to say in each and every market in which we want to do business, we also either want to run an incubator for social equity businesses or support an existing incubator for social equity businesses. And part of that is because I'm seeing policymakers put a social equity focus on the delivery space within this industry. And so, you know, to me and to the Lantern team, our business operations and embracing the social equity principles that are so important in the industry just can't be separated. And the local regulators, whether that's at the state level or the city level, are very important, are an important part of that, an important partnership in executing meaningful incubators. So I hope and plan to maintain those relationships and continue to work with the regulators even after we get a launch.
And how are they defining a social equity business in Massachusetts, say?
So in Massachusetts, it is a broader definition than some other markets, but generally speaking, it's someone who has a low-level cannabis conviction from the past, and some sort of residential requirement is usually also tied to this, and also service-disabled veterans and minority and women-owned businesses. So it's a broad definition in Massachusetts, and I think there's a real effort to try to get more diversity and ownership in the industry.
And your job, day to day, week to week, you are definitely on the cutting edge here. What is it like? Are regulators and are they somewhat? You must spend a lot of time educating people. And what are your weeks like during this time?
Yeah, no 2 weeks are the same, let alone any 2 days. It's a very dynamic job. It's a lot of fun. To your point, there is a good amount of educating that goes into my day to day. I am seeing a trend, or I guess a shift, from policymakers and lawmakers, where especially in the Northeast states, they're starting to recognize that home delivery of cannabis is inevitable and is a part of, or going to be a part of, any successful legalized and regulated marketplace, because in an illicit market, you have that delivery option for the most part, especially if you're in a metro area. And there's also a level of discretion for your patients or your customers that's enjoyed with home delivery. It's also an excellent entry point into the market for social equity businesses. That said, there's a balancing act that needs to happen from a lawmaker's perspective with public health and safety, product diversion, and things like that. So it's an interesting topic within an already interesting topic. Cannabis is the intersection of a lot of different policy issues, and then to narrowly focus it on delivery is perpetually fascinating and interesting to me. And I think there's a lot of different ways it can be executed in different states or different markets.
Yeah, I mean, so interesting. And now a lot of industries are like clubs. Everyone kind of shares war stories. What is the cannabis club like? As you talk to your colleagues, and you're working in Denver and you're working in Boston.
It's fun. The cannabis community is one that is growing for sure. And I'd say I got into it in like 2018, 2019. So 2-3 years ago. And I've seen it evolve dramatically. So, frankly, a few years ago, in my personal experience, it was a lot of finance guys, a lot of white guys, if you will. And now I'm seeing and meeting a lot of amazing women and people of color, and I'm making lifelong friendships all across the sector, and regionally too. So, I've got a buddy who's the go-to in Virginia, and another girlfriend who's the go-to in New Jersey, and a rock star who owns the industry essentially and is like the hub of networking in Detroit, and the same thing in Denver. So there's just really good people coming into the space, and we're finding ways to work together. And I enjoy that part of it every day.
So I have a feeling that we saw a number of companies make missteps early on. It's probably because the finance guys were in charge.
No, not the finance guys.
Yeah. Katie's like, well, I didn't say that. Who's the rock star in Detroit?
Okay, yeah, I'll give a shout out. It's Rebecca Collette. She is the CEO of a grower processor called Calixium. And she is just in it for all the right reasons and killing it. She was our She was our local partner for an incubator we launched in Michigan that just ended last night, actually, called the Detroit Cannabis Project. And it was bigger and better than anything we could have imagined. Super excited about it. Very excited to continue to work with her and try to do it bigger and better next time.
That's great. That's great. And you know, and there's no playbook for what you're doing. I mean, you guys, there's no roadmap. I mean, I don't know if the expression the Wild West, but you guys are, you know, making it up as you go along.
Yeah, that is true. And we're pretty self-aware and transparent about that, where we're learning lessons every day in every market and adjusting as we go. And I think that's part of being in the cannabis industry, no matter what part of it you're in, you've got to be agile and adjust. But specifically in delivery, because there's just a number of ways it can be executed. And, you know, I think we'll see the space get more congested in the next few years. But right now, there's us and just a handful of competitors. And from, you know, from my perspective, from a regulatory and government affairs perspective, we're usually very much aligned when it comes to the legislative and the regulatory advocacy effort.
Yeah. And by making it up, I mean, just to be clear for my, for the listeners, you know, there's new issues coming up, all the time, for the first time. You know, a lot of industries, you know, if you're working, on cable, you know, you've seen the same issue for 20 years. There's a playbook, there's a roadmap. There's people who can advise you as to what to do, what not to do. Everything you're doing, it's new cities. It's a new product. It's a new regulations. I mean, everything is being created from scratch.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just new for the industry that's trying to navigate a regulated space. It's new for the policymakers and the lawmakers who are accountable at the end of the day for the votes they take and the structures they put in place. And so I think there's also a good amount of grace that we all need to have in the space, because I do think everyone's coming to the table and trying to do their best and get it right. And, you know, it's easy to look at some of those early states and take lessons and be critical. And I think it's important to remember that this is an immensely complicated issue. And, you know, it's an industry that, you know, realistically has been around for a very long time and operating very well and successfully and sophisticatedly. And the true policy goal is to create opportunity for that existing industry, also welcome in new players and strike the right balance where a state can see some tax revenue and also, you know, destigmatize a plant that's not nearly as harmful as we've been told it is in the past.
And then I guess we should touch on medical marijuana. Mm-hmm. Is that an area that Lantern is going to be active in?
So I think our focus will be adult use cannabis, but we do currently facilitate home delivery of medical marijuana in Massachusetts, and it's certainly something we're open to. I think we just see the most demand coming from the adult use marketplaces.
And so your background, you are a lawyer. You at one point worked for a lobbying firm. And the reason I mentioned New York early on is because that's where Katie is located. And you mentioned the lobbying firm, I think you said being kind of a mile wide and an inch deep, which is a perfect description because there's so many different issues you're working on and so many different legislators you have to talk to. And I think you said you went to law school to be kind of to flip that and kind of an inch wide and then a mile deep. And I think you've achieved that. So tell us about what you've done since law school.
Yeah. So since law school, I was fortunate enough to get a job with the state operations team for Governor Cuomo here in New York for a few years. And in that role, my portfolio was financial services agencies, general government agencies, and the gaming commission. And so I really developed an affinity for pervasively regulated industries and understanding the rules and the compliance aspect and the licensing aspect and really just how those industries operate and interact with a regulator and how a regulator can push innovation and change within an industry. And that was a wonderful experience. And from there, I went to a law firm that also had a lobbying practice, Greenberg Traurig in Albany. And it was there that I got my first cannabis client, Acreage Holdings, and transitioned in-house with Acreage Holdings, which is one of the multi-state operators in the cannabis space. And then transitioned from them over to this opportunity at Lantern. But forever thankful for the kind of the flow and the arc of the career so far. I would have never ever guessed. And I think people say this to law students all the time, like, you have no idea what's on the horizon of your career. It's impossible to predict and plan. But that turned out to be very true for me. I would have never sat down and thought in, 2015 that I would be, considered a cannabis lawyer and really diving into a career in cannabis.
Well, it's so interesting how you were able to wear the two hats, nice to be able to do that, to, keep your foot in the law firm while you also worked for this client.
Yeah, it was a one of a kind opportunity and experience. And I think it says a lot about, the flexibility and the opportunity that is in the cannabis industry. And also, a recognition from my prior firm and employer that this is an evolving space. And, you want to be involved and develop that expertise and get that experience.
And how did you end up at Lantern?
So I ended up at Lantern through Jackie. So your former guest, it all comes back to Jackie. So Jackie was the general counsel at the State Liquor Authority in New York when I was working in the governor's office. And so just a small world, a lot of mutual connections. And when Drizzly was looking to build out the Lantern team, we got connected, and it was an opportunity I couldn't say no to. The team at Lantern is unlike any other team I've ever gotten to work for. Meredith, the CEO, it's so refreshing. It's such an amazing opportunity to work for such a strong woman who's leading a small but mighty team, where everyone's kind of coming into their role, in my biased opinion, as the best from wherever they come from. So I'm lucky every day to be on the Lantern team.
So relationships and qualifications, it's a great combination. How many employees do you have at Lantern?
I believe we're up to 16 employees right now. We just brought on two more engineers. And so we are growing. I think when I started, I was maybe the eighth team member. So, and that was October of 2020.
Wow, you are growing fast.
Yep.
Well, Katie, it has been great to have you on, and great to learn all about Lantern and hear a little bit about your career. We wish you all the best. And for our guests, listeners out there, remember you can follow us on social media on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also sign up for our Monday email, which you can do at thepoliticallife.com. It comes out, you guessed it, every Monday. Used to be Monday morning, but now we drop the morning because, occasionally it drifts into the afternoon. Usually makes it before nighttime. But we hope everyone is staying safe. Knock wood, seems like maybe the pandemic is hopefully coming to an end. So stay safe, have a great week, and we will see you next Monday.